And we're starting in Galatians 1:16. And anyway, in verse 15 is where Paul started talking about his conversion to Christ. Galatians 1:16, if you want to turn to that. Galatians 1, starting in verse 16. To reveal His Son in me, that I might preach Him among the Gentiles. Straight away I conferred not with flesh and blood, neither went I up to Jerusalem to them that were apostles before me. But I went away into Arabia, and again I returned to Damascus. Now Paul's adversaries had gone behind him to the Galatian churches and discredited his teaching by telling them that he was not a real apostle, and that what he was teaching was a perversion of the gospel that he had received from the other apostles in Jerusalem. And here in the text, he is telling his readership that God's Son, Jesus, was revealed directly to them so that he could preach him among them. Paul's mounting defense is to point out to his readership that he got his gospel straight from the highest source, and he did not consult anyone else as to what he had been teaching them. He did not consult the other apostles beforehand, never even having gone to Jerusalem at the beginning of his ministry. Paul did not receive his commission from the other apostles, but was acting under the direct authority of God, thus affirming to his readership that what he had taught them was authentic. Anything other than that, be it more or less, did not come from him and was a product of man's interjections into God's will. Upon receiving his commission directly from Jesus Christ, instead of seeking out the other apostles, Paul went directly east into the land of Arabia, where he began preaching the gospel to the Gentiles immediately. Paul later returned to Damascus, where he converted to Christianity and preached there, to Damascus, where he had originally become a Christian. And he preached there for a period of time. Paul's purpose for revealing this information is to demonstrate that he had received his commission directly from Jesus Christ, and that he was acting independently of the Jerusalem church. His adversaries had made the claim that he was not a genuine apostle, and that he was acting under the direction of the Jerusalem church and preaching a gospel that was not authentic. The Judaizers were going behind Paul directly to the churches and interjecting their Judaizing practices into their faith system by whatever means necessary in order to achieve their ends. A big part of their strategy was dependent upon their ability to discredit Paul. If they could achieve that, then the rest of what they was teaching was just simply a matter of teaching. Once they were able to destroy Paul's credibility, if they were able to do that, and as we learn in the beginning, they were more or less somewhat successful, because Paul said that he marveled at how quickly they had left, the faith. And so the Judaizers were having success in the propagation of their Judaizing teachings. So we know that they were successful in discrediting Paul to the degree that the Galatian churches had actually apostatized and were following after some of the beliefs. In Galatians 1:18, Paul starts discussing his first visit to Jerusalem, the first time that he went there, and that would be after his conversion. Galatians 1 and verse 18, then after three years, I went up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas and tarried with him 15 days. Now after these 3 years, up to that point, up to the 3 year point, Paul had been in Damascus preaching the gospel. Paul left Damascus under less than favorable conditions. He was forced to flee for his life. And this corresponds with Luke's account in Acts 9:22-26. If anybody wants to turn there, we'll be reading from there. When Paul left Damascus, Acts 9, verse 22. Acts 9, starting in verse 22. But Saul, speaking of Paul, increased the more in strength and confounded the Jews that dwelt at Damascus, proving that this is the Christ. And when many days were fulfilled, the Jews took counsel to kill him. But their plot became known to Saul, and they watched the gates also day and night that they might kill him. But his disciples took him by night and let him down through the wall, lowering him in a basket. And when he was come to Jerusalem, he essayed to join himself to the disciples, and they were all afraid of him, not believing that he was a disciple. This is the first time, after the 3 years, this is the first time that anybody in Jerusalem had ever had seen Paul since his conversion. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Proving.
They're trying to kill him, even though he's proving that what he's saying is true, they're trying to kill him because he's a false teacher, basically what they're saying to people.
Yeah, and he's able to prove that, and we'll get into that later on in chapter 2. I was actually working on that this morning, where Paul said, through the law, he died unto the law. You can prove that Jesus Christ is the Messiah from the old law. Because the old law is just replete with, the Old Testament is just replete with the teachings of that. You have to know almost nothing at all about the old law or just the Old Testament or not understand it at all to have missed Jesus Christ as the Messiah. It's possible to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Jesus Christ was who he said he was. It was 3 years after Paul's conversion, and he was growing very proficient at confronting the unbelieving Jews, and they were going to kill him at their first opportunity. Paul's disciples snuck him out of Damascus, and it was at this time that Paul decided that it was time to go to Jerusalem. Paul was known by reputation in Jerusalem as a persecutor of the church and a man to be feared. And when he tried to meet with the Christians there, they were afraid of him. And so Barnabas took him to the apostles and vouched for him. Peter had a rather large house in Jerusalem, and it makes sense that Paul would have stayed there with him. But if you remember, Paul, you know, he was known as somebody who was a persecutor of the church. Whenever he showed up in Jerusalem for the first time, there was a lot of apprehension there because even though he had converted for three years, they still weren't too sure about him. And it was Barnabas that stepped up first and said, he's converted. This man is who he says he is. You don't have to fear him anymore. And moving on into verse 19, but other of the apostles I saw none save James, the Lord's brother. The accusations of the Judaizers against Paul was that he was not an apostle. And that what he was teaching was delivered to him in some part by the 12 apostles that had walked with Jesus during his ministry on earth. Paul is building the case that he never had an opportunity to learn from them. He was only in Jerusalem for a few days. And that after 3 years of preaching the gospel, that he was only there for a few days. He didn't go there to study with anybody. He didn't go there to get any new instruction. It's not why he was there. And when he did come to Jerusalem for the first time, he only saw Peter and James. This James, as far as people that were recognized as leaders of the church. This James is identified as the Lord's brother, and he was not one of the original 12. So the only original apostle that Paul saw in Jerusalem that we know of was Peter. Of course, he called him Cephas. In the prior verse. Okay, Galatians 1:20, moving into verse 20. Is there anything anybody wants to add to it so far before we move in to verse 20? Now touching the things which I write unto you, behold, before God I lie not. The case against Paul by the Judaizers was that he was a phony. And he was going around teaching inaccurate gospel, received under the authority of the original 12. You know, by whatever they could do to discredit him, whatever they had to say. Paul's defense of himself is a direct contradiction to what the Galatian Christians had been told by the Judaizers. Paul is reinforcing his defense by affirming in writing that the things he is writing are the truth before God. Such a statement is not to be taken lightly. Paul invokes the name and authority of God in the verification of his claims. A modern day equivalent would be the addition of, "So help me God," to a statement. Such is the force of the declaration that Paul made in this verse. In Acts 9, 28 through 29, we get an inspired look at Paul's activities while he was in Jerusalem at this time. Paul was not sitting at the feet of Peter in his house being instructed. Paul was busy evangelizing and getting himself in trouble with the unbelieving Gentiles. Paul was with the disciples there working, teaching, and evangelizing from the start. He wasn't there to learn anything. He was there to work. Paul did not come to Jerusalem to learn the gospel. Paul already knew the gospel when he arrived there, and he immediately busied himself with the disciples there in the spreading of it. And so zealous and effective was his presentation of it that in just 15 days of being there, he was in danger and was being killed. And he was escorted to Caesarea, where he then set out for Tarsus, to the city of his birth. He did not go to Jerusalem to learn anything. He went to Jerusalem and he started teaching, and he was pretty effective at it. In 15 days he had to run for his life. Galatians 1:21. This is after the visit to Jerusalem. "Then I," this is Paul speaking here, "came into the regions of Syria and Cilicia." In Acts 9:30, we learn that after leaving Jerusalem under the threat of death, Paul was escorted by the disciples to Caesarea, where he then headed for Tarsus. And that would have been a journey by ship. Tarsus was the birthplace of Paul and was a city in Cilicia, in Acts 22:3. When Pompey subjected Tarsus to Rome, it became the capital of the Roman province of Cilicia, the metropolis where the governor resided. In 66 BC, the inhabitants received Roman citizenship. For a time, it was called Juliopolis in order to seek the favor of and to flatter Julius Caesar. It was in Tarsus that Cleopatra and Mark Antony met and was the scene of the great feasts that they gave during the construction of their fleet in 41 BC. Tarsus was a grand city with palaces, marketplaces, roads and bridges, baths, fountains, and waterworks. It had a gymnasium on the banks of the Cydnus River and a stadium. Tarsus was later eclipsed by nearby Edina, but remained important as a port and a shipyard. Present-day Tarsus is the Edina-Mersin metropolitan area, the fourth largest metropolitan area in Turkey, with a population of 2.75 million people. Tarsus district forms an administrative district in the Mersin province and lies in the core of the Kirkarova region in the Mersin province of Turkey. Upon leaving Jerusalem, after having spent time with only one of the original apostles, Paul is making the point here that he did not seek out nor see any of the other original 12. He went from Jerusalem straight back to working as an evangelist elsewhere.